Bibles to this letter to the Galatians, Galatians chapter 5, I'm going to read from verse 25 and following, the way it's laid out in this edition of the English Bible that I'm reading from the ESV. It starts a new paragraph at verse 25, so I'll read 25 along with the passage that was our scripture reading for today. You have the outline for the message in your bulletin there. The well-known question from the subtitle of today's message, "Am I my brother's keeper?" You recognize it. It came from the familiar story of the first sons of Adam, Cain and Abel. Cain became jealous when God accepted his brother's offering and not his own, and Cain ignored God's warning that sin was crouching at the door, and he failed to steel himself against the temptation and against the flesh, and a wrong heart blossomed into violence. Seeking to hide his sin, he killed his brother, and when God asked him, "Where's your brother?" In denial, Cain replied, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Relationships. When fallen humans interact with one another, there will be problems. But something happens when God intervenes. But believers, having experienced the grace of God, knowing the love that is demonstrated toward us in the gospel, can reflect a measure of that love in our relationships with others. And so, as we saw a little bit earlier in this chapter, in chapter 5, verses 13 and 14, where it says, "For you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word: you shall love your neighbor as yourself." We can do that because the gospel is the foundation and the fuel of the Christian life. And so I call this study Gospel-Shaped Relationships. In Martin Luther's commentary on Galatians, he made this comment. He said, "The truth of the gospel is also the principal article of all Christian doctrine, wherein the knowledge of all godliness consists. Most necessary it is, therefore, that we should know this gospel well, teach it to others, and beat it into their heads continually." That's subtle. Well, if you feel like you're getting a bit of a headache after 4 or 5 months studying Galatians together, I won't apologize. Blame Martin Luther. But as Paul said in Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For it is the righteousness, for in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith. As it is written, the righteous, the just shall live by faith." We live by faith, believing God, trusting Him, and allowing His Word to dwell richly within us. As we do that, we're led by the Spirit. We walk by the Spirit. That brings us to the main idea for this passage that we'll be looking at today. You have it there in your bulletin. As we walk in the Spirit, we will find joy in the Christian life as we gently help others who are struggling along the way. First of all, the prerequisite to serving others, walking in the Spirit. I'll read verse 25 to set the context here. "If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another." Only in a right relationship with God will we find the perspective and the empowerment that we need to have a healthy relationship with the people around us. Having a right relationship with God is the indispensable foundation to having good relationships, healthy relationships with the people in our lives. Paul reminds us of that here in verse 25. If we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step, or let us walk by the Spirit. If we live by the Spirit, or really we could translate it based on this context here, since we live by the Spirit, since we have this new life, this new relationship with God, by grace, through faith, we need to live differently. We need to allow the Spirit to empower us and to guide us in our lives. Since we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. The Spirit is the presence of God in the life of believers. He's the one by whom we have been regenerated, baptized, and sealed. And in the light of that reality, we are to walk in a conscious dependence upon Him, trusting His empowerment and leading as we allow the Word of Christ to dwell richly within us. What does that look like in our relationships? Well, verse 26, the start of our passage for today, helps us here. Paul lays the groundwork for chapter 6 in this verse. He says, first of all, let us not become conceited, the English translation here says. This word translated conceited is a difficult one to translate because we don't have much else to compare it to in the New Testament. This is the only place in the New Testament this particular word occurs. One writer talked about the root of this word. It's really a compound word that two different words that are brought together, vain glory. And vain in the sense of empty, or empty of glory, so to speak. And this is what Tim Keller said in his commentary about this particular word. He said, conceit is a deep insecurity, a perceived absence of honor and glory, empty of glory, leading us to need to prove our worth to ourselves and to others. And this fixates our mind on comparing ourselves to others. When we seem better than someone else in some trait, our honor hunger puffs us up. It makes us feel great. When we seem inferior to someone else, we're devastated for the same reason. We don't measure up. In addition, honor hunger can make us very competitive. And this describes the natural state of our heart without the gospel. If we're conceited, we'll be provoking and envying one another. I heard in a sermon I heard Keller give, it was not in his commentary, he mentioned this idea that humans were created to bring glory to God. And more than anything else, there's somewhere in us as a creature in God's image, this longing to hear the affirmation from the Father, well done, good and faithful servant. And if we feel like we're not walking with Him and that He's not pleased with us in some way, we're a little bit like Cain in that particular story in Genesis, you know, that we're struggling, that something's not fair about this. And we either take it out on God or we take it out on people around us in some way. That longing in our hearts, it seems unrequited. There's something that's missing in us. And typically it starts with comparing ourselves to others, to the people around us. Paul says here, let us not become conceited. He's urging his readers to be spiritually and emotionally healthy, to see themselves rightly as they really are in the light of the gospel, a human created in God's image, but desperately needing grace. And now if they know Jesus, saved by grace. So So when we see a struggling brother or sister, we know the truth. We don't look down upon them. We don't judge them. We realize, but for the grace of God, there go I. That's me. If it wasn't for God's sustaining grace in my life. He says, don't be conceited, provoking one another. And this word, it's another word that only appears once in the whole New Testament. It appears right here in this context, as it's translated here, provoking one another. It has this idea of competitiveness, of looking down in some sense on the people around us, trying to exalt ourselves in comparison to that person. It's kind of the idea of a superiority complex. And the second phrase, envying one another, it has more or less the opposite idea, right? A person who looks at others and sees their giftedness or their abilities or their standing in life and thinks, I could never measure up to that. That's not fair. So he gets a kind of an inferiority complex, and that effectively leads us to despise the people around us. Or even to question God's character. How could he make such a flawed creature like me? These seem like such opposite ideas. You wonder how could they really be covered by this one word, vainglory, in this context. Again, I'm appealing to Keller's commentary. He made a good point, I think, on this. Listen to what he said. He said, though provoking and envying seem like exact opposites, they are both forms of conceit. As C.S. Lewis pointed out, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. Self-flagellation and low self-esteem are not marks of gospel humility. They're just as much a rejection of the gospel as our pride and self-confidence. So both the superiority complex and the inferiority complex are at root born of insecurity and inferiority. They're just two different outworkings of our desire to gain glory for ourselves, to make ourselves feel worthwhile as people. When our heart is right and we're walking in the Spirit and centered on the gospel, we'll see ourselves more clearly, with a proper humility, a sinner saved only by the grace of God, but also because of Christ loved and honored in the eyes of the only one who really matters. Then we'll be in a position to serve one another in the love of Christ. To fulfill the main idea here, that as we walk in the Spirit, we'll find joy in the Christian life as we gently help others who are struggling on the way. That brings us to the purpose of confronting sin. We see it in verse 1. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. We focus on that word, restore. Notice, first of all, by the way, that he does refer again to the Galatians as brothers. That's important because this has been a very stern, confrontational letter. But Paul's heart, as he's writing to them, his desire for them is that they be corrected, is that they be restored. He's urging them. He's showing this attitude of this concern for their restoration, and he addresses them here with some tenderness, so some compassion. Brothers, he's motivated by love. His goal is not condemnation. He's not just trying to point out the failure and the sin in the lives of the Galatians, and especially those false teachers. His desire is that they hold fast to right doctrine, to the gospel, and reconnect with the Lord in a positive way. His goal is not condemnation, but restoration. Notice what Paul is urging the Galatians and us to do. If anyone is overtaken in a trespass, restore him. And when it says here about being overtaken in a trespass or caught in a trespass, as some translations say, the English can give you the idea of this must be talking about something like John chapter 8 and the woman who was caught in adultery in the very act, right? I don't think that's the idea here. I think that this idea is not that the person being caught by people, but by the person being overtaken by this temptation, by this sin in their life. Go back to the book of Genesis again for a minute, to that story of Cain and Abel. You remember the two brothers offered their sacrifices, and the Lord accepted Abel's offering, but not Cain's. And listen to this in chapter 4, verses 6 and 7 of Genesis. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? And why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it." We all know what happened next. Cain met his brother in the field and he killed him. God warned him, using this powerful language, picturing sin as a demon crouching at the door, ready to pounce. And I think we should take that warning to heart. Most believers who fall into a sinful practice or into a sinful relationship are caught up in it. They're caught off guard. They don't plan it or expect it, but somehow their heart begins to be enticed, and all of a sudden, there they are. That might be what the proverb is getting at. It says in Proverbs 4:23, "Above all things, guard your heart." That's the foundation. That's the essential. That's the indispensable thing. Watch our own heart, and then we'll be useful for God in ministering to the people around us. So when we see a brother struggling in some area of life, what do? Shun them? That's not good. Ignore the problem? Talk to somebody else about what they're doing, right? That's something to do. Maybe write an accusatory Facebook post. That'll convict them. No tweeting, please. Remembering God's grace toward us, what should we do? We should come alongside of them. We should be honest with them, but in love, gently, seeking to restore them, seeking to help them to get back in step with the Spirit. What we are to do is to seek to restore. Well, does that mean that's your job, Pastor, right? Or the elders, or the deacons, or the deaconesses, right? Well, no, that says, what does it say here? You who are spiritual, restore such a one. Oh, you might think, oh, good, that leaves me out. I never like confrontation anyway. Don't you know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? Paul says in Romans 8:9 that if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to him. God's Spirit indwells every one of us who know him. Spiritual is not talking about someone who is a super saint. It means someone indwelt by the Spirit. And in this context, indwelt by the Spirit and walking with God. Walking by the Spirit. And that is what we all who know Jesus should desire to do and do desire to do at in our better moments. To know God, to walk with God. And that means we're all responsible for one another. Every one of us who know him. Am I my brother's keeper? I guess I am. Have you noticed how many commands in the Bible use the phrase one another? We're told to love one another, to be kind to one another, to forgive one another, to serve one another, to encourage one another, to show hospitality to one another, to pray for one another, to build each other up. in this context, to bear each other's burdens. You get the idea that God created the church. He designed us to be mutually interdependent. Who's to seek to restore? We are, if we belong to Christ. If you see a brother or sister overtaken in some trespass, some sin, you seek to restore them. And how? It's indispensable here. How we're to do it? In a spirit of gentleness. Watching yourself, lest you too be tempted. Excuse me. A few verses back, gentleness was listed among the fruit of the Spirit. You remember that? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. Gentleness, a fruit of the Spirit. And in this kind of situation, we need a special portion of it. We don't come to someone judgmentally or pridefully. We don't come like the Pharisee that Jesus spoke of in one of his parables, who prayed, "Lord, I thank you. I'm not a sinner like that guy." That's the Stephen unapproved translation, kind of reading between the lines. But that was the idea, right? I thank you that I'm not like other men. With love in our heart, we gently, remembering the grace of God in our own life, understanding that but for the grace of God, that could easily have been us, we come. And notice the follow-up admonition. Watching yourself, lest you too be tempted. Don't ever think that could never happen to me. Thank you. The moment you start thinking, "That could never happen to me," is the moment that you're most vulnerable. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Guard your heart. Walk in the Spirit. And as we do, we'll find joy in the Christian life as we gently help others who are struggling along the way. Well, that's my second bottle of water this morning, and I thank you both. It's all about serving one another, right? Yes. We need to walk in the Spirit, and as we do, we'll find joy in the Christian life as we gently help others who are struggling on the way. That brings us to the final point, the possibility of sharing and bearing our burdens. Verses 2 through 5. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And then notice the last verse, verse 5. For each will have to bear his own load. It's interesting that it's a counterpoint, that we bear each other's burdens. We have this responsibility toward one another, but we also have to take responsibility for our own Christian life, our own battle against sin. First of all, constrained by the love of Christ, we bear one another's burdens. Now, love is not specifically mentioned in this verse, but it does refer to the law of Christ, right? Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. I think that drives us back to 5:14 in this context. The law is fulfilled or summarized in this one commandment, to love your neighbor as yourself. In John chapter 13, 34, Jesus also said, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another." How, in this context in Galatians, are we to fulfill that command? Specifically, by bearing one another's burdens. Now, sometimes the issue might be clear, but oftentimes there's more going on when someone is struggling in their life than we realize. This week I came across a story that I've heard in different forms before. Reportedly a true story of a boy who was being bullied, and to make the story short, he was knocked down by a bully, and Another boy came to his aid, not only stopping the bullying, but he also helped him pick up this big pile of books that he had. And long story short, they became friends. And the boy who had been knocked down, well, his life was changed from that moment. And he began to do well in school, everything. He had a new direction in his life. And in fact, years later, he was asked to give a speech at graduation. It says, reported in this context, that in the speech, he shocked everyone, especially his friend, by saying that the day he was being bullied, he actually had cleared out his locker of all his books, and he was going home planning to take his own life. Only his new friend showed up. He was there, and he came to help him, not only to carry his books, but also to carry his burden. And he found hope. It changed the direction of his life. There's often more going on behind the scenes than we know that led to this struggle that this person is involved with. And so we need to care. We need to care enough to get involved, to come in alongside of them and to offer encouragement and hope, gently offering correction as it's needed. Sometimes exactly what they need is not someone judging them, but someone caring enough to gently tell them the truth and to help them along the way. Love one another. Encourage one another. Bear each other's burdens. Have you thought about it, that we're not made to be isolated, Lone Ranger Christians? We're a part of a body. We're a member of the body of Christ. So that we could help others with our gifts. God gave each of us gifts so that we could encourage and build up each other, and so that the whole body could work together more effectively. And not only so we could help each other, help others, but so others could help us. Right? It's mutual. We're interdependent. The language here is pretty strong. Verse 3. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. Wow, that's pretty strong language. I think that's deliberately that strong in this context. Hyperbole and an intentional exaggeration. Are we something? Of course we have value if we're created in God's image, but the tendency that humans have, we tend to think more highly of ourselves than we ought. The point is that we shouldn't think too highly of ourselves. We have to see the truth of ourselves, recognizing that we have no righteousness of our own. There's none righteous, not even one. That the only righteousness that we have is because of God's grace at work in us. That our only standing is in the grace of God. Remember how Paul had to confront the Corinthians. The Corinthians who were caught up into all kinds of sins, but at the heart of it was this pride that they struggled with. And in that letter, Paul exhorted them in chapter 4, verse 7, what do you have that you did not receive? And if you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? Humility. It's not that we think bad of ourselves. We just think of ourselves less, as C.S. Lewis said. Think about others before ourselves. We open our eyes to the needs around us, and we should care enough to confront gently with proper humility. Verse 5, we need to take responsibility for ourselves. We saw that, right? Everyone should bear his own load. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be himself alone and not his neighbor. The first part of the verse there. That conceit mentioned back in 5:26 comes to mind. Comparing ourselves to others. No need. We're all in the same situation, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. There's none righteous, no, not one. That's why I call this study gospel-centered relationships. Every person has value. We're all created in God's image. Every person needs grace. And as we realize that, it frees us to serve one another in love. As we walk in the Spirit, by the Spirit, keep in step with the Spirit, we'll find joy in the Christian life as we gently help others who are struggling on the way. How are you doing in terms of keeping in step with the Spirit? Are you doing well enough that you're available for God to use you to help others along the way? When you get out of step, do you more easily tend to confrontation? Thinking that you've got nothing to offer someone who's struggling and on the other extreme? Or do you fall into pride? Do you chastise or do you avoid the situation? Maybe you're like me and you can vacillate between those. Neither extreme is right. We need to guard our heart. It says, guard your heart lest you too fall into temptation. And then you see a brother struggling, you see a sister struggling, you pray for wisdom and for godly boldness with gentleness to care enough to get involved, to be available for God to use. Am I my brother's keeper? By God's design, you are. We're available. We should be for God to use. The words of Paul in 2 Corinthians 5:20 came to my mind, where it says, "We are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." That's our ministry to one another. May we be found faithful. Let's look to him in prayer.